would never come home again. It was partly as a tribute to his brother that Tom, barely 18, enlisted, applying for pilot's training in the Army Air Corps. He had never flown an airplane in his life. He would never forget the first time. What an exhilarating feeling as the ground dropped out from under the little single-engine trainer. 50 feet, 100, up and ahead, outstretching its arms, was the big blue sky. What a thrill it was to fly. Then at 200 feet, suddenly the world fell silent. The engine had quit. Tom, his heart pounding, shot a glance toward his flight instructor. No reaction. The experienced pilot simply, calmly, deftly manipulated the controls, and moments later they were gliding softly onto a grassy pasture. And only then, after the plane had safely rolled to rest, did the instructor turn to Tom and smile. "Just remember," he said, "there is always a way." Now flash forward to a world at war, to an American B-17 over the Netherlands. Tom, the co-pilot, is a 20-year-old seasoned veteran of more than a dozen combat missions. He's right now returning from one more. The distances involved routinely stretch the plane's fuel capacity, even more so on this particular bombing run. To compensate, the crew leans out the fuel mixture and races the draining tank. Then suddenly, simultaneously, over the Dutch countryside, all four engines die. Down the checklist, try everything, nothing works. The pilot, Ken Sens, turns to co-pilot Tom. He says, "We'll have to bail out." There were plenty of reasons to resist bailing out. For one, the ground below is enemy occupied. For another, the Army parachutes. The last time a 10-man crew bailed out of a B-17, only one of the chutes opened. But there are no options now, are there? They're all dead for sure if they don't jump. So Tom unbuckles himself and gets out of his seat, thinking about those yawning bomb bay doors, but something stops him. For some reason, fear inside, he just stops and looks back at the instruments and hears a voice, the voice of his first flight instructor, saying, "Just remember, there's always a way." The next instant, Tom is lunging for the fuel mixture control, jamming the knob all the way forward, and promptly, as though they'd been waiting for some secret word, all four engines roared back to life. The plane surges, the crew returns to stations, the crisis is past. There would be other crises. There would be enemy fire narrowly avoided, dead stick landings in farmers' fields, but through each of the little wars inside the big one, Tom and his crew found a way to another day, and one of those days the war was over, and Tom, whose 30 combat missions honored the memory of his brother who had flown before him, went home, eventually soared into another kind of history book. You never knew the young co-pilot who saved his craft and likely his crew over the Netherlands in World War II. And yet, as you might imagine, he never stopped believing that there's always a way to get any job done. There's always a way. You know the accomplished gentleman. Oh, yes, you know that young co-pilot for the man he became. The revered former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, Tom Landry. And now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guests are Jenny Grininger and Rebecca Kosnick, trustees of the Templeton and Tascadero School Districts. We're going to be talking about math and reading proficiency and how that's working out for us here at the local school districts. And we want to talk about Moms for Liberty versus the Southern Poverty Law Center. How the heck did you guys get on a hate map? I don't know. It's pretty scary. And we'll do a follow-ups on Mahmoud versus Taylor, which is the LGBTQ opt-outs, and what's going on with our local schools on that, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So, Rebecca and Jenny, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you here. So I'm going to start here. You two know better than anybody that I kind of keep researching this show to the last minute. And I happened to pick up an article on Real Clear, Real Clear Education, which is part of the Real Clear Politics website suite. And this is by a guy who's an author who writes about education. His name is William Dershowitz. I thought that, and while he was writing about secondary education, college level education, I think this really grabbed me, because I think our whole education system is really doing a lousy job of creating citizens and children and adults that really understand our country and how important it is to them. And I'm just going to quote the first paragraph. He says, "It's no coincidence, it seems to me, that the decline of liberal democracy as a fact and value have succeeded the decline of liberal education as a fact and value. If we're ever to revive the first, an essential step will be made to resurrect the second. The two liberals, after all, are the same. They refer to political liberty as understood by ancient Athens, Republican Rome, and American founders, not libertarian freedom from individual constraint, but collective self-government by civic equals. It's opposite a tyranny, arbitrary rule by a single will, a dispensation we're becoming more familiar with than we ever thought we'd be." So I guess I'd like to discuss these various different topics of it, kind of in that context of what's happening to our kids. What are we doing to them? Because, I don't want to sound harsh, but it's almost like, we've got a generation, and don't throw anything at me. A lot of them, they're imbeciles. They really don't. And it's not their fault. It's the fault of our education system. What do you think, Jenny?
Yeah, really, for me, it's quite simple. It's the amount of screen time and access to the internet that they have. It's changed the way that, how fast information comes at them, and it's changed their ability to focus for a longer period of time. And it's rewired their brains.
Yeah.
And so that's really the gist of it. And then on top of that, you have all these mandates from the state, which really have no real viewpoint as to what's needed. And they're mandating things that aren't needed or that are not needed in the way that they're expecting them to be delivered. And so it's just a mess.
Yeah. What do you think, Rebecca?
Yeah, I think that our kids are really lacking in emotional maturity. And I think that that's, I think a lot of parents, probably myself included, where we have allowed the schools to kind of replace us. And, the kids go to school, they're in school for, 7-8 hours a day, and they do sports and stuff, and they don't. And we're really missing that one-on-one parenting aspect of it, because we live these busy lives. Yeah. I remember my parents kind of, if I was upset as a, growing up, just grow up, life happens. And I don't think that's really happening within schools, because they're putting such a huge emphasis on how you feel, and not necessarily giving you the they think they are, but they're not giving them the right tools to deal with their feelings and emotions.
Yeah. I just remember as a kid, my love of country was developed in school. And it might not come as a shock to you, but my favorite part of when I was in elementary school was when they'd give us the current events. We'd do current events, and we were required to cut an article out of the newspaper and talk about it for 2 minutes. And you can see that's what I do constantly here, what I do these radio shows. So, and again, kids just don't have an interest in that stuff anymore.
No, and you can be proud of your country and not love everything about it.
Right.
And I think that's friends and family, you can be proud of them, but not necessarily agree with the way, the way that they're living their life or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with the country. But living in America, and I've been seeing a lot of articles and stuff on Europeans and other countries that are visiting the United States for the FIFA soccer tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
that might not be the right, I'm not a soccer fan, that might not be the right term, but they're experiencing America how it should be, you know, when we're so, when we're living in it every day, we see all the negatives, and there's so many more positives, and we're not perfect, but we need to be proud of who we are and where we came from.
Well, right, and I mean, again, the education system, the news media, it's all about atomizing people, mm-hmm. you know, making them others. Mm-hmm. And then they accuse us of, they accuse conservatives about, you know, always othering somebody else. It's not really us othering any. They're doing this.
A divided country is a weak country, and
that's
it's easier
right.
to control.
Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit. Let's take this to the next kind of topic. There was a couple of interesting articles this weekend in the Wall Street Journal. Well, one was in the Wall Street Journal, and it's about this National Assessment of Educational Progress. And it basically it was an indictment of the school shutdowns and during COVID that were basically engineered. And again, I know you guys don't want to talk about the unions, but the unions, the teachers' unions, were 1,000% behind this whole notion of shutting down the schools and doing remote learning. I don't know if there was a reason for that.
There definitely was.
Well, what were they?
It's very clear. You should have seen the movie 15 Days. It explains it very well, and they have the video proof for it. The unions had an agenda, and that was that they needed more money to put forward what they wanted, which was more money for defunding the police, more money for LGBTQ agenda, more money for climate change, and they weren't going to give up on this endeavor until they got that, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a large amount of what's taught in our schools,
mm-hmm.
you know, not exclusively by any means, but I know my own son comes home talking about climate change all the time.
Yeah.
And we just keep presenting him with the other side of the story. You know, it's not one way only. It's not that clear cut and dry.
Nobody's talking about how the UN just came out with a report that said, whoops, really, we overestimated these problems. Nobody
right.
talks about that.
Right.
So, yeah.
I think they know a lot of that stuff. And mm-hmm. they, you know, I mean, if you just look at research on, you know, maybe vaccines or hormone replacement therapy in women, right? 20 years ago, they're saying it causes cancer, all this stuff. And over the past 20 years, they've done more research and finding out that it's actually beneficial to mm-hmm. women that are my age and above. A lot of that was, I mean, we saw that with studies on the effectiveness of masks and all that stuff during COVID. And we would post it on Facebook or whatever, and it would get censored. All this stuff that myself and Jenny saw the past 6 years is all coming to light.
And really, you know, to me, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. I mean, everybody should have known this inherently already. If you're going to restrict your breathing and not get proper airflow, which is what your body needs, you're going to be more susceptible to illness, and it's killing brain cells. So, you know, and of course, their argument always was, well, surgeons wear them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's, first of all, it's a different kind of mask. It's fitted to them. It's a limited amount of time. It's not all day, every day. And there's more oxygen pumped into that surgery room.
Mm-hmm.
So all these factors that people aren't aware of or forget, or I don't know, but it was a huge departure from what we did and from what we ever learned about disease control.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was so willing to just go along with it.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw it, because the Wall Street Journal also did an opinion documentary this weekend, or they released it, called The Lockdown Dissidents, which talked about the Great Barrington Declaration and all that kind of stuff, that really what the government did to these very prominent doctor, Bhattacharya, for instance, Scott Atlas, with, you know, all these guys from the big hospital, you know,
Stanford
and all that kind of stuff. And they were basically, you know, threatened into silence, really.
Right.
Many of them. What was the name of that documentary? The 15
Days.
And what was the gist of that?
It talked about how quickly everything changed with COVID, mm-hmm. and it was showing the Zoom conversations with the union and what they were really promoting and why they were going the road that they were going. And, I mean, there was one portion of it where Jane Fonda was even on there with them, and she said, "This is God's gift to the left." It just is disgusting what they were willing to do to our kids.
Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, all across the board. Again, if you're creating human beings that don't have reasoning power and they don't understand the country and how it's supposed to work, it's easy to control them, right?
Yeah. I staying on the masks a little bit. I was talking to a grandmother over the weekend. And during COVID, her grandson was in kindergarten, and she was their babysitter during the day. And she said when he went back, and this was his second grade year, he goes, "Grandma, I think so-and-so was in my kindergarten class." And the reason he couldn't recognize her was because of she had a mask covering her face, and he finally recognized her eyes. Hmm. You know, and that was the thing I remember hearing people and talking about it back then, where, you know, young kids are looking at faces to get the whole picture of conversations and all this stuff, and they pick it up, especially babies, and they weren't getting that.
Yeah. So when it comes to proficiency in math and reading, and let's bring it a little back to local, but it's fine. No, that's where I wanted to go actually with the conversation, but. You know, according to these reports, the children that were really stuck in this, whatever it was, a 3 to 5, 3 or 4 year period where they were doing all this remote learning, they really are suffering. The younger kids who didn't experiencing that are doing a little better as far as math, but you don't think so, Jenny, huh? That's what they indicated, but that's why I wanted to ask you. I mean, what are you seeing in real life here in the Templeton
The problem
schools?
Started before COVID. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it was the method that they were teaching. They went away from teaching phonics, and they're teaching sight words, and they're teaching guessing. Really, it's look at the picture and try to figure out what the words are saying. Don't just read the words, and instead of phonics and teaching kids how letters sound and how to sound out a word, so you could be reading anything and figure it out. And they're getting back to that now. They're realizing the issue, but this
phonics is going to be mandated in California. I don't know when the law goes into effect.
Yeah.
In probably 2021, somewhere around there, 22, there was a podcast called Sold a Story. And it's about the science of reading. And that woman, who I think kind of leans more to the left, she was exposing that the sight-based reading and everything and how bad it was. And they knew that it was bad, but they just kept pouring millions and millions and millions of dollars into this program because they had sold it to the whole United States on this is the best way to learn reading. And even when it was backfiring, they still poured more money into it. And we're finally, thanks to her podcast, a lot of people realized what was wrong with it.
So this is another industrial group, as it were, that's you know, just they're spending money so they can, you know.
Education has always been very political, I've learned.
Yeah.
The curriculum is political, meaning not that they're teaching politics, but it's all about who has the money and who it is that they're following right now. What's the next new shiny thing?
Mm-hmm.
And they forget.
So much money to be made in it.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's government money.
Yeah,
it's OPM.
Yeah, and if you come up with a new way to do something that's better than the old way, there's so much money in it.
Well, and again, prove it. I mean, do they ever prove it? Or is it just kind of like the next bright, shiny object?
I mean, I know that
happens in the insurance business, too. You know, there's some new thing that's like, oh, everybody runs to it.
Data can always be manipulated.
Yeah. They make up studies or pull certain data out of it. And but it's and in the 20 years that was going on, or 25 years that was going on, our kids are that much farther behind.
Yeah. So you're not seeing you're not seeing much of an improvement in the reading at this point, or you're starting to see a little bit at the younger ages? And
we are seeing some improvement, but it's not leaps and bounds like, I'd like to see.
Right.
And I think that if we were focused more on the academics, that we would be seeing leaps and bounds. They're so focused on their emotional well-being. Mm-hmm. Their focus has become teaching them social emotional learning and not academics. Yeah. And their reasoning behind that is that the kids are so emotionally deficient that they can't learn.
Right.
And so we've got to help improve their emotional psyche so that then they can learn. My belief is they're part of the reason they're emotionally deficient is because they don't have any confidence.
Or they haven't been taught.
Right. And if you would just focus on the academics right. and help build their confidence in that, the emotional parts of it would take care of itself in most instances. You're always going to have some kids that there's something going on in their life that is causing some emotional upset. You can deal with those kids on an individual basis, but to have the entire district focusing on just social emotional learning and with some academics sprinkled in mm-hmm. is not healthy.
And holding kids accountable.
And you're finding the same thing going on in Atascadero
right,
as well.
Right.
Okay.
And it's hard for the teachers to hold them accountable.
Yeah.
You know, they have the social passing, so it's really hard to hold kids back. And I know that there's a lot of mixed feelings about that because, you know, there's some studies that say holding kids back is actually detrimental to their self-esteem and confidence. But then, you know, but you've also got the flip side of the studies that say, hey, you hold them back for a year, they go into that, you know, say second year of third grade and they are confident.
Yeah. Real quick, thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. And we got like a 30 seconds here. So ask your question real quick, okay?
Okay.
Or make your comment real quick.
Thank you for your information today. Just want to find out, do you know if the charter school here in Paso Robles teaches differently than the public schools? Because I'd like to move my grandson based on the results we're getting.
Yeah, you're talking about. You're talking about Almond Acres. So Almond Acres is still a public school, even though it's a charter school. They're still mandated to teach the same standards that the rest of the public schools in the state are. So really, you're learning the same things. The big difference is that they're not unionized. So you have teachers that are more accountable to putting out a better outcome.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to square this circle, as it were, talk about cell phone and AI, and then move on to the Moms for Liberty. So folks, we'll be back in about 2 minutes. So stand by.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Hey, folks, we're back, we think, and we're just going to keep talking until Ann can figure out what's going on. We weren't hearing a feed here, and so we're very sorry about the technical issues. Now I need to find my notes again. Tell us a little.
You're sitting
on them. Tell us a little. So tell the audience a little bit about what's going on with phones and cell phones. Is that a resolved issue now in Atascadero and Templeton, or is that still pending?
That's still pending. The log goes into effect, I believe, July 1st, where schools need to either limit or prohibit cell phone use at schools.
Mm-hmm.
We are updating policies right now around that. We put out, as a school board, we had decided that we didn't want to make the decision for the whole district on our own. And we put out a survey, but that was, I don't know, maybe 4 weeks ago or something like that. We didn't get a huge response to that, so I don't want to go over the numbers or anything yet. I would like to possibly have them do it again towards the beginning of the school when they're maybe filling out all the paperwork to return to school, so we can get, mm-hmm. I think we had like less than 200, and that went out to teachers, parents, and students. So I didn't feel like that was a very good representative of our district.
Okay.
Representation, that would be the better word.
So, but again, I mean, so are kids still using cell phones on campuses and doing all that at all ages, all the way through?
I don't, you know, at the elementary schools, I haven't heard of that being an issue, but definitely secondary, it can be a really big issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Templeton has a totally different experience. So we started talking about cell phone usage before the governor came out with this new law, and we're already in the process, and we did the same process that Atascadero is now doing, but we did it like a year ago. We did a survey of parents, teachers, and students, and we did get a really good response. And shockingly, all three of those categories were all very much in alignment that they did want restriction.
Hmm.
So kids are even noticing that they, would be better off if they didn't have so much access to their phone. And so we made a policy that K through 8 had, they could have their cell phone on their person, but it has to be completely turned off and in their backpack for the entire day. No bringing your phone out during breaks or anything. The high school, it's that way just during instruction time, but they could have it out during lunchtime and passing period and breaks and stuff.
Hmm.
And we just reviewed that policy last week, and we're likely going to be changing for the high school because there's been issues with them still having their phone on. If they could put it on during passing period, then they get into class and they're still on their phone, and it's creating disruption. So we're probably going to have just lunchtime and breaks, and that's it.
And then I gather that the AI thing is now bubbling up.
Oh, for sure.
And what kind of process is going to take place? Let's start with you, Jenny, again, in Templeton, to kind of manage this, because I mean, I use AI all the time now to do research, but to me it's like crib notes. I still have to go research stuff. Mm-hmm.
You learned how to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Outside of AI. So we had an AI summit in our district where we invited kids 5th grade through 12 to come and participate in the first half of the day and help form a board policy and talk about concerns that they have. And there was a series of exercises they went through. And then we had parents, community members, and teachers come in the second half of the day and do the same process. What was interesting to me with that is that the students were wanting more restriction on AI than the adults were.
Why is that?
They're worried about it. They recognize already, they know they're using it. They recognize the inefficiencies and the untruths, and that they're hearing about the concerns, and they're concerned about it too. And they think that kids K through 2 should have no exposure to AI at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about?
And I hope we listen to them.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, AI, I think originally you think ChatGPT and, Grok or whichever. Those actually learn your habits and learn about your life. For instance, yesterday, my son wants an electric scooter. So I put into chat, what's a good scooter for a teenager? And it said, if this is for X, and it named my son's name. And I was like, wow. But then there's also the AI tools that they are using to help teach. I think that has some place in schools, but I think that it's going to get abused by, you know, some teachers, some administrators. And then also, of course, the dark side of AI is the AI-generated inappropriate pictures that they right. make of fellow students and everything. So it's a huge can of worms that it's opened up, and we're not going to be able to get away from it. And I'm not saying embrace it, but we need to find a balance between, and we're actually going over our AI policies right now, but there needs to be a balance because it can be used and abused for sure. And it is collecting data for
yep.
everything that you're doing. So,
well, yeah, I mean, I use Perplexity, mm-hmm. which is, I haven't even tried any of the other ones yet, but I mean, I can tell it's learning. It's already suggesting things that I want to know next because it's figured me out.
Yeah. Well, type your name in. Say, hey, tell everything you know about me. It'll be amazing to see what it pulls up.
That would be a scary read. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, and really what that does then is it's not stretching your brain.
Right.
Right. It's not saying, right. well, have you considered these other things? This wouldn't be usual for mm-hmm. you, but here's these other aspects. So it's really shortchanging everybody in, when it's doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So just before we go on to the Moms for Liberty and the SPLC, what's the next learning thing that's going to be a problem? I mean, are you looking down the road after AI and all this? Are you seeing anything?
Math is going to be the next soul to story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Math is suffering more than reading is mm-hmm. at this point. And you know, it's hard to decipher it all because you have this state testing, the CASP, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the kids are not, it doesn't affect their grade. So a lot of times kids are not even trying and like they're done with the exam in 10 minutes, which you know that they didn't do it then. They mm-hmm. just filled out whatever. So the results that you're seeing are very, very skewed. And then, you know, how do we develop a test that's going to really, truly test what they know so that you can then build upon that? And that's what we've got to focus on is what's the testing that we can get done that's going to be more accurate?
Yeah. I saw a news story about how Google has actually, they actually have created universities for kids to learn how to be electricians. And they're giving scholarships because they're going to have such a huge demand for electricians for all of these data centers that they're building and stuff
but
like that.
But not online schools.
No, they are actually
hands-on.
Yeah, hands-on schools.
So now Google's competing with the trade schools.
Possibly, yes. Yeah, yeah. So
interesting.
Yeah. So all right, let's move on. You know, the SPLC Moms for Liberty story has been in the news. I think. You know, Moms for Liberty kind of got dragged into it, in my opinion. It was just the overhaul view, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. But SPLC is under indictment, I think, from the Department of Justice for basically hiring hate groups so they can continue to raise money to write about hate groups.
Yeah. Right.
And this could very well be because there is no hate or very little hate, and they have to gin it up so they can keep getting their donors to write big checks. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah. Moms for Liberty, you guys are big Moms for Liberty folks. What they got dragged into this whole thing recently. Tell us about that.
Well, it's not recently. SPLC dragged us into it from the get-go. Mm-hmm.
2023 is, I think, when we officially made it onto the hate map.
Yeah. Yep. So,
anti-government group is what an anti-government extremist group, and I am pretty anti-government, so I don't know that I don't know that I'm an extremist, but I don't really have a problem with that.
Well, America is built upon being not all about government, so I think that's probably why we have the viewpoint that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Government is supposed to be pretty limited,
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
it's become not at all limited. It's running our lives. And so we're supposed to be running the government, not the other way around. And
what a revolutionary thought.
Right, right. it's we the people, not we the government.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, the opposition is going to say they were spending their donor money to have spies infiltrate some of those groups to prove that, you know, it's a hate group.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't doing just that. Mm-hmm. They were also using that donor money to purchase things for the hate groups, like with the KKK, burning crosses, mm-hmm. and things such as that, which you're then promoting that group and promoting the hate. So their argument to me doesn't hold up.
Right.
And when you know, we're definitely very well aware of what Moms for Liberty is about. There's no secret in our mind. Mm-hmm. To say that it's a hate group is such a far reach. That's nowhere near that. I just know that then there's an issue there, that they're lying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it seems to me it looks like Moms for Liberty is working with the Heritage Foundation on a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information request from who exactly? Do you know?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not
is it from,
sure.
Is it from the government or is it from?
I'm not aware of the FOIA request, but we do often work together mm-hmm. with the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah. No, it's a good group. It's a good group.
It is.
Yeah. So
I know they did some FOIAs for the Biden administration because we were, you know, on their terrorist mm-hmm. list. You know, and we were in Philadelphia and we had all of at our summit. We had, you know, they had like a street festival of protesters. Those people were paid.
Mm-hmm.
One of our chairs from Seattle was coming, and she was sitting stuck in the airport for hours because of bad weather. And some of the protesters were sitting behind her, and they were actually talking about their Visa gift card that they were given, and that was flying them to protest in Philadelphia at our summit. And then they were talking about flying down to, I believe it was Orlando, for a TPUSA protest mm-hmm. after, and it was all off of those gift cards. I don't know who was paying, but I know that whoever was paying them was probably working with SPLC and other organizations that were similar.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many of these organizations that started off doing good things, or at least we thought they were doing good things. Maybe they haven't from the beginning, but, you know, when you're originally starting off in the 60s fighting the KKK, that's a good thing.
Right.
And then you find out that they're funding modern-day KKK.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. It's always...
Something changed there, for sure.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of The Daily Wire, and I listen to Matt Walsh. And, I mean, he's doing a whole series on racism right now.
He loves Moms for Liberty, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. Mm-hmm.
His sister's in one of our chapters.
Oh, yeah? That's cool. I mean, he's a very smart guy. I mean, you listen to his stuff, and I say, well, this is definitely revisionist history, but maybe, you know, there's probably a truth, lots of kernels of truth in what he's saying. That, you know, I mean, went from the Cesar Chavez revelations to the Martin Luther King revelations. I mean, it's interesting what we don't know.
And if you're not teaching real history, you're just bound to repeat it.
Yeah. So let's move on to one of my least favorite topics, is the whole LGBTQ stuff. I was thinking about that coming over. I was going to ask you a question about it, but we've spent a lot of time on Mahmoud versus Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
So just give a real quick summary of what that Supreme Court ruling was. That was last year, right?
Yeah, I think.
And Moms for Liberty was really involved with this, right? Correct?
Yes. Yeah. A couple of the moms that we have that brought that lawsuit were Moms for Liberty members. So,
right.
Yeah, we had Roslyn was on with me a few months ago. Yeah.
Right. So it really stems from a school district on the East Coast that was teaching curriculum that was LGBTQ related, and they were offering an opt out. And then at some point, there were so many parents exercising the opt out that they decided to quit offering that and force the curriculum. And that's when parents started to sue. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court, which is really beneficial because now it affects not just them, it affects all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And in the state of California, we have a law that requires our district to teach LGBTQ curriculum. We didn't have a way around it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we do, because the school districts are supposed to be telling parents that what it is exactly that they're teaching, and then provide you with the opt-out. And so I know for sure in Templeton for seventh grade, there's a whole chapter of that's about the LGBTQ that they're supposed to be teaching. And I think that probably most parents aren't aware that that's there. Number one, they know they have an opt-out for the sex ed, but they're not being informed about the LGBTQ component. And they don't know that they can opt out of just that portion. They don't have to opt out of the whole sex ed unless they want to, but they can opt out of that portion.
And this goes into the PRISM training for teachers, which is like an anti-discrimination training that's now required. PRISM itself was teaching that, saw screenshots of it today or slides of it today, where they are not required by law. It tells them that you are not required by law as a teacher to tell the parents if their student wants to go by a different name or gender or whatever at school.
Right.
But today, actually, I was watching a video that Sonia Shaw, who's running for state superintendent, so vote for Sonia in November, she logged into the PRISM training, and there's now like a warning on there that says, that states the Mahmoud versus Taylor lawsuit, and that they cannot, they have to give an opt out to teachers or to parents about
mm-hmm.
it. So that's actually wormed its way into, in a good way, wormed its way into the teacher's training.
So are the opt outs in place, available now and in place in Atascadero and Templeton schools?
They are in our school district, but I don't believe that they are as robust as they could be or should be.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, everybody's aware you have an opt out for sex ed, but if you're not being specifically told that there's LGBTQ components and letting you know that you can opt out of just a portion of it if you wish, parents aren't going to realize that and exercise their right. So there's a lot of mistrust that's happened since COVID. And if the school districts, they're constantly talking about the chronic absenteeism and how horribly it's impacting us. If they really wanted to improve that, they would work on the transparency. And this is one way to do it.
And again, I know you were involved with a controversy regarding whether it applied only to
K through eight
versus K through 12. And where does that stand in the districts here?
We haven't specifically talked about that, but depending on the lawyer, your representation, even within the same, Lozano Smith, say, depending on what lawyer you talk to, some will say it's K-5, some will say it goes all the way up to
12th grade
or when they turn 18.
Okay. So what about in Templeton,
they finally have decided it's all grades. K through 12.
Okay, and nobody's pushing back on that.
No, they're not.
All right. So in the last minute here,
your religious liberties don't end at age 11.
No kidding.
Okay, so that's what the lawsuit is all about.
Yeah.
I specifically asked the CSBA lawyers whether
CSBA is
California School Board Association,
okay,
at their conference, whether a student who is of a religion that their parents aren't, if they can opt themselves out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, so, and we should also say that these are our individual opinions and not necessarily representative of the board.
Right.
Exactly.
That's fine. That's
yep.
Thanks for that disclaimer. We got about 30 seconds, so we may have to take this on to the other side of the break. When you walked into the studio today, you said to me, don't forget to ask me about the Trevor Project. What the heck? This is something new that you have to deal with now, right?
Yeah. So California has enacted another law. We've always had a law in place that required us to provide something on the student's ID card for suicide prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a generic suicide hotline, right? Now it's required specifically to be the Trevor Project. And the Trevor Project is specific to LGBTQ. So now you're ignoring all the other students who may be suicidal. And this is the only avenue that they're being directed to. So I have a solution that I would propose, and we can talk about that after the break.
Yeah, I actually hear the bumper music again, so I think we're back on. We're doing good. So, okay, folks, we'll be back in about 3 minutes, and we'll wrap this up with Jenny and Rebecca. So stand by.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report. Stocks finishing mixed with the Dow notching its 17th record close of the year on Iran deal optimism. Oil prices fell and settled around their lowest level since the earliest days of the war, with West Texas Intermediate crude at around $76 a barrel. Tech was the worst performing sector, weighing on the tech-heavy NASDAQ, while industrials and financials gained. The Magnificent Seven big-cap tech stocks finished mostly lower, led by Microsoft and Tesla. Shares of Elon Musk's SpaceX continue to take off and posting a third consecutive day of gains, with its stock up 5%. The Dow winners, Caterpillar, Goldman Sachs, and JP Morgan Chase. The Dow decliners, Microsoft, Nvidia, and Salesforce. The Dow rising 329 points, the NASDAQ lower by 308, S&P 500 lower by 43. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
My name is Whitney Allen, and I'm a widow. My husband Ryan died. We never thought we'd ever have to use life insurance, but the unexpected happened. With Ethos, signing up was fast and 100% online. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and get same-day coverage. No medical exams, and you can get up to $3 million worth of coverage. I'm grateful we were prepared.
Get your free quote at ethos.com/term. That's ethos.com/term.
Paid spokesperson. Time spent on application may vary. Online health questions required.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Well, Rich London, it's spring. If I need a mattress, why should I spring into the mattress specialist?
If you look around, you're going to see mattresses everywhere in this store.
We're talking to Rich London, the mattress specialist.
They are stacked up almost to the ceiling, and I'm not kidding. And they're all on sale right now because I've got too much stock and I need to move it. So come on down quick and save big.
Enjoy the special springtime savings at the mattress specialist at 13th and Riverside in Paso Robles.
Do you use propane? At Delta Liquid Energy, you can pre-buy your winter propane gallons to lock in your price. Fuel prices fluctuate, so with Delta Liquid Energy, you can take advantage of potential pre-buy savings. To learn more, contact Delta Liquid Energy before June 30th. Family-owned and operated, call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online to deltaliquidenergy.com.
And we're back with Rebecca Kosnick and Jenny Gringer, trustees of the Templeton-Atascadero School Districts. You can still call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Next week's show, I do some different kinds of shows here. My first guest is going to be my neighbor and friend, Ed Lysak, who is a guru of orchids, and he is the chairman of the Five City Orchid Society here in Slo County, and they're having a big event on the 27th, I believe. And we're going to talk all about orchids and why orchids make a difference in your life. I got to hear that. And then District 1 Supervisor John Pichon will come on and talk about, oh, I'm sure everything about Slo County government and all that type of thing. And also, folks, by the way, don't forget that RP Slo is doing a 250 Years of Freedom barbecue on June 28th at Templeton Park. And I'm sure you want to go to that. It's a lot of fun. So you want to go to RP Slo OC? RP Slo. I'm sorry.
Easy for you to say.
I know.
CO, probably.
It's been a long show. I wasn't drinking with Eric in the first segment either. RPSLOC.org. God almighty. It's been one of those days. All right. Let's go back to this Trevor project. So basically, they're worried about kids committing suicide, but only gay kids. Or yeah. LGBTQ+MMXYZ kids.
Right. So the problem with the Trevor Project, as I see it, is that it offers chat rooms for for 13 to 24-year-olds. So they're automatically placing minors with adults. In the research that we've done in Moms for Liberty, we see that the adults are inviting kids to go off of that platform and meet on Discord, which is a known sex trafficking. They're predators.
Yeah.
So you're taking kids who are really vulnerable and potentially suicidal, and you're making the problem worse. There's all kinds of sexual talking to the kids. There's been evidence of the kids themselves saying, I don't feel safe here. You know, can somebody come in and intervene? This isn't right. So they recognize that it's not good. And why we would want to expose our kids to that, I have no idea. My solution is, if we have a state law that's requiring us to put this on the back of every student ID, there's nothing stopping us from creating two different student IDs, one with the Trevor Project and one with a generic suicide hotline. And the parent can decide which one they want their kid to have. We're following the law then. We're making student IDs with it on there. And it's the parent who's in control over which one their student should have.
Yeah, whatever happened to get to the parent getting a call and just saying, I think your kid's got some issues. You know, you need to get him some help, him or her some help.
Right.
I mean, what is wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it. And actually, you know, this one of the things that the PRISM training, hopefully, they're also doing is talking about Mirabelli versus Bonta, because that has a direct impact on the PRISM training. That is a Supreme Court lawsuit that is that two teachers from San Diego started, saying we're not willing to keep secrets from parents. Our religious rights are preventing us from doing that, and they were fired. So they got their jobs back. And now the whole nation, again, is impacted by this decision, which is a really good one.
And who's pushing this Trevor Project thing? Who's behind that? Is it a state law?
It's a state law.
Okay, so it's something it's that California. Our goofy legislature
passed.
Yeah, and
I'm sure it's funded by Planned Parenthood and California Teachers Association.
Okay.
Those kind of the same gang of
a lot people. Of corporations are behind the Trevor Project. And my guess is they really have no idea. They think it's something good that's for kids that are LGBTQ related, and they think they're doing something positive in protecting them, but it's actually doing the opposite.
I'm at this point, I mean, you're being kind, I think. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, because I don't trust anything that's coming out of the California state legislature
anymore. Well, I'm talking about other, like Nike and, you know, Coca-Cola probably is on. I can't remember all the different, there's so many. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost every corporation is involved in supporting the Trevor Project.
I believe it was started after a kid named Trevor was killed. And so, much like the SPLC, I think it started with good intentions. And
yeah.
It was hijacked. And
we
had a chapter chair in Riverside who went undercover as a 14-year-old, and she was the one that exposed it and was invited into those Discord chat rooms and with very inappropriate conversations. So it's happening. People will say it's not, but it is absolutely happening.
In the last 30 seconds we have, I want to circle back to community schools, because you brought on with one of the times you were on the last time, where you brought in Kelly Shenkowski. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this gets back to your original comment about the government and unions and teachers and school districts getting between their kids and what's right and wrong. So give us an update on community schools, Rebecca.
The update is they're still pushing them.
Are they?
And it's just a lot of, you know, some of the extended school year funds is part of that community school outreach, where they're saying, hey, you're a little bit behind, you know, you can come into school, but it's really just keeping the kids longer.
Yeah.
With you know, all of the clinics and stuff that they're putting on the campuses, whether it's, you know, silly things like, you know, eye exam or teeth exam, it's all the same thing.
Yeah, so it's, again, it's just it's intervening in the parents' role,
taking money from the kids.
All right, guys, it's been great having you. I think we got almost all the topics in. Thanks again. We'll see you soon, huh?
Thank you.
Right, folks, I'll see you next week with Orchids and John Pashon. How's that? So you have a great week. Thank you.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton. It's